All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, May 18th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday. We all love Mondays. It is 77 degrees here in upstate New York and overcast. It's super muggy. I actually opened up the door this morning and said, forget that. I closed it back up and turned on the air. We don't get them too nice and muggy like that too often. So it was a little unusual. I wasn't expecting it. So where do we start today? Long weekend. My weekend was actually really busy this week. Had lots and lots going on in the network and lots of shows to produce, lots of things to swap around, and lots of family stuff going on. So I had tons of news for you guys. Sat down this morning to try to sort out what we were going to look at today, and I think I came up with some good stuff to pick at and kind of take a look at what's going on. On Friday, we were fortunate enough to have Mr. Brandon Turbeville on visiting. He had the day off, so that was great. Brandon has jury duty at least for a little while this week. Hopefully he gets out of that. And if he does, I believe he is going to be guest on hour number two this Thursday night on the Ocelli Effect. At least that is the original plan. So stay tuned. We might get to hear Brandon a couple times this week with new material. Today, what I'd like to look at, though, is kind of continue on from where we were on Thursday. Let me scroll down here. I believe Thursday's show had to do with the remote control beetles, where they sucked all the living guts out of this beetle, or at least this researcher was talking about it, and leaving a chassis, and how disturbing that was to me. Yes, Before the First Cup of Jewels, forced x-rays, cyborg beetles, and Musk says evil robots by accident. We were looking at some artificial intelligence as well, and I kind of want to get back into that. Not necessarily artificial intelligence to start with, but definitely some things to do with the brain and the internet and things of that nature, nanotech. I don't know if we're going to get to nanotech today, maybe tomorrow. So anyway, we had a story from, I don't know, it was maybe Tuesday or Wednesday last week that actually looked at all of a sudden that pesky internet getting in the way, radicalizing jihadis. And how the internet is such a bad thing. We got to be careful because now, according to the new head of the NSA, it can be used as a weapon system. Yes, a weapon system, people. And remember, with the FCC now taking control of the internet, that is quite a significant announcement from the guy who is the head of Cyber Patrol, from a federal perspective. ISIS using the internet as a weapons control system means that we are probably going to see quite a bit more lockdown than what we've had. And anybody who's on the internet and does as much work on the internet as I do probably knows that that has been already happening little by little, small increments, where things just stop working, things have inconveniently stopped sharing. Again, I woke up and hey, all my messages were read that came in while I was sleeping this morning. So you gotta love that one. No alerts, but I go in and they've been read. So who the fuck is reading my messages? I mean, honestly, you're out there listening, NSA. I don't put anything anywhere that incriminates me in any way because I'm not doing anything but sharing information. But if you want to read my boring messages, then go right ahead. But it's just disturbing. It really bothers me and starts to piss me off when I see shit like that because people get mad at me that I don't respond to messages. Well, guess what? I don't know I have messages if they don't alert me that there are new messages that came in. And oh, by the way, they look like they've already been read, which they have been. Anyway, there is a video that I don't think this is the same one. And if it is, well, then we can hear it again to kick off of Monday. But it is titled ISIS Using the Dark Web as a Weapon. Now, if anyone remembers, and I think this is a different video actually from the one we looked at the other day about the internet now being a weapons control system. If anyone knows anything about the dark internet, Personally, I've never surfed around down there and I don't plan to. And the reason why I don't plan to is because if you're down there, that probably puts you on even a bigger red list than most of us are on now. The dark web, though, is a whole piece of the internet that is not readily available to you and me. You need special Tor software to be able to go in and dig down in there. Google does not currently index any of that, but oh, lo and behold, that is where places like, oh shit, it's Monday morning. What the hell's the name of that called where they were selling all the contraband online and they got busted? Oh, I don't even remember. Please excuse me. But anyway, we know that the federal government has gotten their sticky fingers into the dark web. There were a lot of stories about the feds actually having a big hand in the original encryption that then was used to build Tor with all of its levels of onion-like encryption that allowed you to bounce around between different IPs and hide your identity so no one supposedly knew who you were, but they've been bust now. And, of course, you would know it. Let's march forward because now they are talking about how ISIS, yes, ISIS under every bed and in every closet and now on every internet browser. Remember, ISIS is coming for you. They now apparently are in the dark web as well. And so the dark web has become a target of the federal government. Here we go. ISIS using the dark web as a weapon.
ISIS, still undefeated after months of bombing, has entered a new phase, using the cyber world as a weapon. The recent ISIS-inspired attack in Garland, Texas, was carried out after gunman Elton Simpson publicly posted this tweet on the internet using the hashtag TexasAttack. Now, new online threats are forcing the Pentagon to confront a secret internet most of us never see in a place most of us have never been, the dark or deep web. The U.S. believes ISIS and others are now using the most covert part of the online world to recruit fighters, share intelligence, and potentially plan real-world attacks. Think of the entire internet as an iceberg.
Everything above the water is what we would call the surface web, or what can be indexed by Google. But below the water, that huge iceberg, that's the deep web. That's the part of the web that's not indexed. There's so much of the web that we can't just Google for.
And that chick was from the Rand Corporation.
Making it tough to crack, but researchers are finding portals to get inside.
What we have found is a website on the darknet. One of the references to the website, a few of the references to the website, was that it's an ISIS funding website.
Pentagon scientists plan to go in and chase ISIS down.
We need a technology to discover where that content is and make it available for analysis.
That military technology, known as Memex, acts as a unique search engine, seeing patterns of activity on the dark web and websites not available via traditional routes like Google or Bing.
Memex allows you to characterize how many websites there are and then what kind of content is on them.
Hype.
Now, by the way, we're going to look at Memex once this clip is over, but Memex is a DARPA technology. Put on a seatbelt, people, because this is just not going to be any fun here in the near future, I don't think.
Being on the web has become easier with tools like Tor, a browser that bounces communications around the world, keeping anyone from knowing what sites you visit and where you are located, basically making you invisible.
And remember, they've been pushing for a while, anonymity on the web is not going to be allowed here in the near future. Come biometrics, come Windows 10 with biometric passwords. Because, you know, people, like they said, it's so difficult to remember passwords. We got to have another way, and that's going to be to identify you through your biological fingerprint, footprint, eye print, face print, the way you move, the way you speak, that will be your identification. That'll be your card to give you the green light that you're safe. You are not a terrorist. And even if you are, now they're going to know who you are, and there's no hiding from that.
You can use Tor either to go to normal websites like CNN.com or to go to what's called special hidden services.
An ISIS militant could be in Texas, but a message is routed to Paris, to Istanbul, and then finally to Syria, making it difficult to track users.
Young people are posting about ISIS-related topics.
Memex will start by tracking the places where ISIS is active online, a difficult hunt through uncharted territory where terrorists have been lurking far too long.
Yes, yeah. Where terrorists have been lurking far too long, that pesky internet. I mean, I just can't even get over. There are many of us who are listening right now, probably the majority of us who are listening right now, that knew the world before the internet, that knew the world then when the internet hit. And what a great boom it has been to the economy until recently, as they have been now locking down on things and deciding that they're going to... one of the big things was when they first decided that they were going to tax internet sales. I remember that was a big issue for a long time. And they had voted that down many times because they were like, hey, why would you tax something that is like really causing our economy to grow? And then it was a few years ago, they decided that anything that had a brick and mortar was going to be liable for taxes. Of course, let the grubby states get their hands on every amount of dollar that they can. But that kind of really gave them the foot in the door. And now as they've been ramping up this mantra, you know, there's an ISIS in every pot, and making the internet the tool that they've been utilizing. And this definitely was a different clip than the one we listened to last week that had the head of the NSA, but it was dealing with the same thing, how this internet now is the tool that apparently has been radicalizing people across the world. And don't think that you and me have not been radicalized. I saw a video. Let me see if I'm on this page. I am. I saw a video over the weekend that really made me almost spit out my coffee. There really were no words spoken. It was a graphic, of course, for stupid people, because none of us know how to digest information unless it's done in a cute little stick figure cartoon. But it is titled, "Do You Suffer from WIMS, and then in parentheses, Web-Induced Medical Stress?" It was put out by healthfinder.gov, sponsored by the CDC. And basically, it was showing some little guy searching on the internet. And actually, here, let's play it. We'll listen to the twanky little five-year-old music with the stick figure as I read it to you. Because this is exactly... Says, do you or someone you know suffer from WIMS, web-induced medical stress? Now, guys, for any of us that have gone online and started searching any of these studies, quote-unquote studies they've been doing that say, oh, I don't know, vaccines are safe, GMOs are safe, nanotech is safe, don't worry about that, people with little pea brains, you don't need to question anything because we will tell you what is right, we will tell you what to believe and what information is true. Thank you very much, Mr. Bill Clinton, tamping down on internet rumors after Fukushima happens. Here's a little stick guy. Sitting too many hours increases your risk of death, is what he was typing and he found out on the internet, and he stands up and gets all nervous. Standing up too quickly causes dizziness in 2,176 survey participants. Oh no, now he's even more perplexed, so he sits down. Bright lights disrupt your sleep, increasing the risk of disease. Oh no, he turns his light off. Bad lighting increases your risk of household falls by 345% as he's typing in the dark. Turns his light back on. Oh my God. He clears his throat. Throat clearing can be an early sign of 69,798 horrible diseases. Now his face is all red as he's freaking out. Calm down immediately. Stress can worsen life-threatening health conditions. Now he doesn't know what to do. Now he gets a whole bunch of messages. Do you have stress-related stress? 7 hidden signs your neighbor has black plague. What your doctor isn't telling you about the ancient healing power of sporgleberries. Try this one trick to cheat death and get the most from your diagnoses. Click here. Those are all the messages that pop up on his screen. Oh, my God, this poor guy is overloaded with information. What is he going to do from that pesky internet? Here's one trick. Oh, he's always breathing heavy. Health information doesn't have to be confusing or scary. No. There's one place for you to go, and that is healthfinder.org. The government, or actually, sorry, healthfinder.gov, a government website, easy to use, reliable, and practical. No ads, no hype. Are you ready to take charge of your health? Get tips for better sleep. Find ways to manage your stress and get the screening tests you need this year. I'm surprised it didn't say, and find out what vaccinations that you need to get up to date. Live well, learn how. Healthfinder.gov. I mean, come on. So, again, to the simplistic public, that ad right there, web-induced medical stress, oh my God, it's the internet that's doing it to you. It's the internet that's full of lies and too much information for you simple thinkers to sort out and decide what is right for you. So, all right, let's get back to this Memex now. That just really pissed me off when I saw that. Because, of course, you can see what the point of that is. The internet is a bad thing. There's too much information out there. So the story now out of Forbes, Memex in action. Watch DARPA, artificial intelligence, search for crime on the dark web. Of late, DARPA has been showing a growing interest in open sourcing its technology, even if its most terrifying creations like army robot wildcats designed to reach speeds of 50 miles an hour are understandably kept private. In a week's time, and when was this from? This was from April 10th, so it was about a month, just over a month ago. In a week's time, the wider world will be able to tinker with components of the military's researchers' body in development search tools for the dark web. The Memex technology, named after a mechanical mnemonic dreamt up just as Second World War was coming to a close, has already been put to use by a number of law enforcement agencies who are looking to counter crime taking place on networks like Tor, where hidden services are protected by the privacy-enhancing encrypted hosting, often for good, often for bad. In its first year, the focus at Memex has been on tracking human trafficking, of course, to save people from the web and from all the evil that apparently happens on the web. And I'm not saying that there isn't human trafficking or child porn, but that seems to always be that dangling carrot that they tell you, just like nanotechnology is going to be to save you from cancer. Them taking control of the web and digging deep into everybody's privacy is to save you from human trafficking and from child porn. But this project's scope stretches considerably wider. It's likely that in the coming weeks, many law enforcement agencies will avail themselves of the search tools, which will land on DARPA's open catalog next Friday. That was next Friday as of April 10th. Though DARPA told Forbes the release could be pushed back to the following Monday. Forbes got an exclusive look at the front end of one of the search technologies created by one of the Memex team, a group of self-proclaimed hackers called Hyperion Gray. According to Alejandro Cercis, who heads up the Hyperion Gray team, a handful of his firm's tools will be available, including, quote, advanced web crawling and scraping technologies with a dose of artificial intelligence and machine learning, and with the goal of being able to retrieve virtually any content on the internet in an automated way. Now, we've talked about this ability to be able to scrape plain text where they can go into things such as Facebook, such as chat rooms, such as bulletin boards, the old BBS services, such as news groups, and take unstructured data and be able to not only get that data and make some sense of it, but one of the things that they were working on, and I think this had mentioned mnemonics at the beginning, is to be able to take context around certain words and determine what that word really means, regardless if you're using slang or not. It actually learns. Says it's a solution to the problem of crime fighting on the so-called dark web, a term anathema to Tor supporters, and it is called SourcePen. It is trying to overcome one of the main barriers to modern search. Crawlers cannot click or scroll like humans do, and so often don't collect dynamic content that appears upon the action by a user. Our approach to solving this problem is to build a system that sees the web more like a human user with a browser and therefore actually behaves like a human user by using a browser to crawl the web to the point of being able to scroll down pages or even hover over an object on the page to reveal more content. And we are teaching the system how to act like a human and how to handle virtually any web page scenario. So this is even more than what I had read about in the past. Eventually, our system will be like an army of robot interns. Okay, did you hear that? It'll be like an army of robot interns that can find stuff for you on the web while you do important things like watch cat videos, says Cersei's. Yes, watching cat videos is what we have been attributed to doing as far as the type of content that the general public watches. And we're going to take a look at like where our mentality is these days. This is very disturbing to me. The video below, which is showing that it crashed, so I'm going to have to see if I can reload this quick. The video below shows the SourcePen front end in action, bringing up a host of Tor-based .onion sites with a tile-based user interface, the latter being a new version. By clicking on a link, it brings up more information on the site. Let me see if I can open in a new window, reload the frame. There we go. Hey, it worked. Clicking on a link brings up more information on the site, which in this case is Euroguns, described as, quote, the number one gun dealer in Onion Land, another name for Tor, where visitors can buy weapons and ammo in exchange for Bitcoin. Now, remember, they were looking at cracking down on ammo sales, too, online here in this country, which still is not illegal, by the way. It is still a country where you're allowed to own firearms and ammunition. There are a host of other big-name partners working on the Memex suite, including, Carnegie Mellon University, which was handed $3.6 million to develop machine learning algorithms. Remember, it's all about the algorithm and the database that'll analyze ads for sex services posted to websites in the hope, and look at it, sex services, remember, it's always to keep you safe, in the hopes of officers will find it easier to search for advertisements related to investigations into sex trafficking and prostitution. National security technology provider Sotera Defense Solutions last week noted that it had contributed a browser called DataWake to the initiative. There are 17 partners in total, most of which who have not yet been revealed, and the project will last for 2 or more years. So we have all these secret partners involved on the interwebs that are becoming part of the surveillance state that they are developing to track down people searching for, oh, I don't know, sex and guns on the internet, as well as ISIS. I mean, this, yeah, I just can't even get over. I mean, I definitely am not saying that there isn't crime going on in the internet. But again, this is a big, wide swath of surveillance that is going after anyone and everything in the name of national security and making everything now public. There's some real disturbing trends that we're going to look at here about banks looking at everything you do to decide whether or not to give you a loan now. How is this any type of freedom? And don't think that this is not going to happen more. I mean, as the FCC is now clamping down, this is becoming a federal utility. And then we have the UN that's chomping the bit. They want to get in on the internet and put in standard controls, use some sort of filtering technologies that they have country to country. China does things like that now. You know, this Wild West internet that we've enjoyed for so many years is going to be no longer. The Memex team also wants to get a better understanding of what hidden services are running on Tor. Christopher White, who heads up the Memex team at DARPA, told Forbes that previous studies were based on biased data sets, where DARPA wants to create a standardized way of counting and exploring the different kinds of sites that Tor-based browsers have, whether they are helping human rights activists or drug pushers. Early results have indicated that there are as many as 30,000 hidden services running at one time. DARPA has not yet divulged which components of the open source bin will be going open source. White said the fuller tool set will be made available to the wider public in December, when the multi-million dollar initiative is done, and he expects many parts of the government and the wider business community, which of course they've now pulled under the government heading of keeping the internet safe, to download and adapt what he calls a general purpose technology. He believes that the likes of Google, Microsoft, Bing, and Yahoo search aren't quite adequate for in-depth searches, not to mention that they only capture around 5% of the internet. The problem that we are trying to address, he says, is that currently access to the web content is mediated by a very few large commercial search engines like Google, Microsoft, Bing, and Yahoo. And essentially, it's a one-size-fits-all interface where you are using the same text bar and the same search terms, that the same interface is being used by many governments and commercial companies who really want to do analysis. So I don't know. We can see if this video, this is Memex in action. I don't know if there's going to be anyone talking here. Let's see how this pans out. It almost doesn't look like it, but we'll check it out. And no, it's just silent. It's someone scrolling through. So I don't know, guys. Put on a seatbelt. DARPA is an arm of the Department of Defense. We already know that the Department of Defense has declared the dark web as a weapon of ISIS and that they were going to use Memex. Notice in that Forbes article, they don't mention ISIS at all, just drug pushers and sex traffickers. And ISIS is going to be you and me. We have the health, whatever it was, gethealthy.gov, or I don't remember what it was, healthysomething.gov, saying that we're all suffering from web-induced stresses because that pesky internet has something to do with it, and they need to keep us safe from it now. Be afraid. Be very afraid. And if that isn't adding insult to injury, here's something that is. This is a story that I caught this morning as a link off of another story from May 7th, 2015. Banks may soon scan Facebook oh, look, and an ad pops up in my face to block what I was just reading. Hold the phone. Banks may soon scan Facebook and call records to see if you deserve a loan. Not alone, like if you deserve to be alone, but alone, like money from a bank. If you think the NSA crawling through your call history and social media accounts is a frightening prospect, imagine a bank doing the same. That is the idea behind the emerging research and startups around credit monitoring, most with the goal of figuring out just how much online behavior tells about a person's fiscal responsibility. Unfortunately, the data is a lot more informative than you were probably hoping, reports TechDirt. Daniel Borgingen, an economist at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, endeavored to predict how likely someone was to pay back a loan based on call metadata. Oh no, there's that pesky call metadata again. And what's so interesting about this is back a few years ago, I read a few stories about how everything we were doing, at least on Facebook and other social media, was actually being mined on the back end, and the data was being funneled to all these different universities who were using the data as sociology projects, as how people interact with each other, what our interactions online cause us to feel or believe. And it looks like this study of the mind, which then turns into thought crime, remember, and predicting the futures of thought crime, has taken a few big steps forward. It now, your call metadata, they're saying, is going to be able to predict how fiscally responsible you are. In the results presented at a NetMob conference in Cambridge, Massachusetts earlier this month, he analyzed the records of 3,000 borrowers from a bank in Haiti. Yeah, Haiti's a good place to start. Who they called, for how long, and how much money they spent. After applying an algorithm, there we go again, Borgingen found the bank could have reduced its defaults by 43% if it had taken his approach to selecting trustworthy applicants. Whoa. How did he figure this? Well, information like phone metadata can easily be extrapolated, and prompt bill payers are typically more reliable than those who hold off. And people who make frequent calls far outside of a bank's network are more likely to have trouble making deposits. However, even the esoteric information can factor in. Researchers at Kananifigi I hate these words in the morning. Signifi, CIGNIFI. A Cambridge-based firm studying the predictive capabilities of mobile data on loan repayment and savings. Yeah, what is that? Yes, there is a firm studying the predictive capabilities of mobile data on loan repayment and savings, found that the time of day and the neighborhoods from which calls are placed can be indicators too. So I guess if you're down in the drug hood a half the day, it means you might not be repaying your loans as easily as if you live in the affluent neighborhoods. Two startups, Inventure and Lendo, Inventure, and Lendo, are shopping the idea of data mining for credit to lenders as a part of a pilot in South Africa last year. Yes, we have a bank account for you with $1 million. All you have to do is send us your bank number, South Africa. Inventure gave smartphones to a small group of people and collected phone and demographic data as they paid the company back. Wow, those are almost like Obama phones. Lendo, which monitors interactions, connections, and activity on social networks, already conducts business in the Philippines and Colombia. Well, that's interesting. think the implications are worrisome? Well, you are not alone. But there is an argument to be made in favor of companies like Lendo. Kyle Mead, innovation director at credit scoring company Entrepreneurial Finance Lab, or EFL for short, told New Scientist about his experience trying to get a loan after moving to the U.S. from Canada. "I had no debt, no previous information on me in the U.S., he said. The highest loan that I was offered was $300 because I am credit thin. Millions of people in developing countries are in the same boat. They lack any kind of financial history, making institutions hesitant to lend. And that's where behavioral monitoring services can really come in handy." Did you hear the keywords? Behavioral monitoring services. Now, what sort of fucked up world are we in where now we're going to have global entities providing behavioral monitoring services? That is just like beyond 1984. I couldn't even believe when I saw this. And it's going to get worse. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg, people. And anyone who sits there in la-la land, like friends and family going, "Jewel, you're just paranoid," needs to get some education and go to that pesky internet that's going to give them medical stress from getting some real information and having information at their fingertips, get their little pea brains on some caffeine, and do some real deep down digging without being interrupted 100 times a day. Because that's the problem. Our attention span is down to what? 10 seconds? We're going to look at that. But that's how they're able to get away with shit like this without people standing up on the couch lighting a torch with a pitchfork in their hand. I mean, I just can't even. Behavioral monitoring services. Says that's where behavioral monitoring services can really come in handy. Lendo has been using it to approve loans for phones and motorcycles, said a spokesperson. Scary as it sounds, the idea of deriving metrics like a credit score from behavioral data is an attractive one for both parties involved. Banks get a better snapshot of customers. First-time borrowers encounter way less resistance than otherwise they would. The process may be invasive, but as our dependence on internet-connected devices grow, it is only likely to become more pervasive. Next time you apply for a loan, read the fine print carefully, very, very carefully. Like, I just can't even get over how insane this is. So regardless, if you have an impeccable credit score, if you posted, I don't know, a Facebook post that maybe some algorithm considers to be radical, you just might not get that home equity loan you were hoping for because they have decided that you might be involved in some sort of insurrection that might make you incapable of repaying your loan. Like, I just can't even get over. All right, so one more story from the same publication that I believe Hecty dropped in chat last week, and I wanted to get to it when we were talking about artificial intelligence in particular, but we're going to have to look at it today because we ran out of time, and this was just unreal. Scientists developing, quote-unquote, angry AI based upon recorded calls of irate bank customers. Now, how many times have we done that? I know I have quite a number of times. The irate bank phone calls, that is, because banks aren't looking out for you and they're always trying to screw you. Pay attention to every penny in and out and every fee, because if they're allowed to get away with it, they will. Many a science fiction author has wondered whether it would be possible to give an artificial intelligence the power to feel love. Now, a firm based in New Zealand is embarking on a project that will imbue an AI with a very different emotion, anger, specifically the sort that is directed toward a customer service representative for a bank. Well, that's got to tell you something. Hey, I did phone support for quite a number of years. And don't think it's just bank customer support, but I bet they get a fair share just knowing the way banks are and how many times they've been busted for doing things like, oh, I don't know, money laundering and things of that nature. The Touchpoint Group hopes to develop an angry AI. Wow, that sounds like quite a worthy endeavor now, doesn't it? Using 2 years' worth of customer calls from four of Australia's largest banks over the next 6 months, and this article was from the 10th of May this month. Over the next 6 months, a team of data scientists will use these calls to build a model that companies can then use to find the best response to common customer complaints. When it is completed, the platform will be able to simulate responses to a host of techniques intended to calm down the caller, according to a report from The Australian. There's little information on what the AI will be capable of upon completion, but swearing, name calling, and angrily ending the call would seem to be likely inclusions. The project is being called Radiant, named for a computer in Isaac Asimov's work that could predict the future of the human race. Now, God, guys, if that isn't a telltale sign. While Asimov was a hugely prolific author, he never got around to penning a novel about the impact that artificial intelligence could have on his bank's call center. If nothing else, Radiant demonstrates just how complex our relationship with technology is becoming. $500,000 Australian has been pledged for the project, which is a hefty price to pay for the opportunity to simulate an unhappy customer calling their bank. At present, this project will be used for training purposes, but it does raise an alarming possibility. We've seen customer service lines outsourced to other countries for years, but how long will it be before AI answers your call? And what bothers me is imbuing AI with some sort of emotions. We read about the other day Google and one of their projects in scanning YouTube and learning pictures, images, to identify images. We read a story from a few years ago and then one more recently, how much better it's getting. How long is it going to be, and who knows if they're even doing it, before they start using things like that with all these different AI projects that are going on globally, super monster computers simulating human brains, where they start then scanning facial expressions, because you know they're already doing that. Jibo, there are computers out there and robots in particular that are coming that can decode human emotion. There was one that we saw back 6-8 months ago. They were talking about embedding into smart cars and the dashboard that can determine whether or not you're experiencing road rage. Home computers that could tell whether or not you're feeling depressed or angry and give you advice. I mean, this just is not cool. There was a story that came out from RT, I think it was over the weekend, about Google's biggest competitor in the AI computing world, and that is Beidou out of China. And that was the lead researcher out of Google's AI project actually left and went there. Well, this is from the 14th. So 4 days ago, Beidou's AI supercomputer breaks Google's image recognition record. So we had just read a story last week talking about Google's AI being able to scan YouTube and recognize images better than it ever had before. Well, Beidou just beat it. Chinese search company Beidou says it has created a supercomputer which raises the bar for artificial intelligence. So, I mean, this is this new race that's going on. The machine identified all but 4.58% of pictures in a set of 1 million images, beating Microsoft software, Google, and humans. Uh-oh! It beat out humans in image recognition. That should be a big ding, 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 ding. Beating humans is a big, isn't that what they call, shit, Cupid doll, someone in chat, what is that called when we surpass humans with computing technology? It's early and it's Monday, so everybody's got to give me a free pass. Come on, what's that called? Cupid doll, anybody? We got a little bit of a delay, so hold on. We're going to do the Jeopardy music theme. Do, 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 do. Do 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 do. And nobody came up with the answer. So now it goes to the Jeopardy computer. Oh God, I don't remember. Supercomputer beating. Yes. There's the chess champion, and actually that same supercomputer actually did play on Jeopardy. Feeding human. Oh, there's actually, and it was Watson, too, that did it. But what the hell was that called? What was that called? Da-da-da-da-dum. Oh, I'm going to have to let it go because I'm losing my momentum. We'll have to find it for tomorrow. It'll be the first thing I talk about. Anyone? Anyone in chat? Last call. Yeah, humanity's demise. That's about it. I don't know. There's actually a term for that. So when supercomputing, when brain, computer brains can beat humans in thought processes, that actually is a big deal. So anyway, they have beat humans in recognizing images. This Bidow supercomputer is called Minwa, M-I-N-W-A, has 72 powerful processors and 144 graphics processors known as GPUs, high-performance specialized chips, typically used to deal with visual data. Minwa's accomplishments were detailed in a paper released by Bidow on Monday. We read a story about a month ago, too, where Intel, who's a large manufacturer of processors here in this country, which we all should know, had been banned by the federal government just recently from selling any of their new processors to China. Well, I had postulated it was because of the supercomputing project, and now that they've beat all the supercomputers in the United States, Microsoft and Google being two of them, I can see why our federal government and the Department of Defense will be nervous about this. To test Minwa's skills, the supercomputer was let loose on ImageNet, a database of over 1 million pictures, and then it taught itself how to sort the images into a predefined set of roughly 1,000 categories. This required Minwa to be able to identify discrepancies in similar images, such as photos displaying two different breeds of dogs. In order to complete this task, Minwa applied a quote-unquote neural network to recognize the images, training its own software with high-resolution versions of the pictures so that it would develop an understanding of the characteristics that it was looking for. The data was even delivered in skewed forms, such as using vignetting, cropping, and color and shape distortion to ensure that the software learned the important properties of each image rather than getting bogged down with unnecessary details. Yeah, easy distraction, oh, shiny baubles. Something that humans have a lot of difficulty in doing is focusing. That training seemed to work, resulting in software that can recognize even the subject of a picture when it is printed out, held at a slanted angle, and then photographed a second time. Our company is now leading the race in computing intelligence, said Ren Wu, a Beidou scientist working on the project this past Tuesday, as cited by the MIT Technology Review. MIT is another one of those educational institutions that is funded by lots and lots of DARPA money working on artificial intelligence and artificial intelligent drones. So I'm sure they're shitting their pants. The computer beat Google's image recognizing record, which stood at an impressive 4.8% failure rate. Wu said, "We have a great power in our hands and much greater than our competitors." He added that Minhua's computational power would probably put it among the 300 most powerful computers in the world if it wasn't specialized for deep learning. Considered to be one of the most powerful forms of AI, deep learning involves what? Algorithms, that should be the word of the day, which have only recently made their way into the tech industry from academia. And they've actually been there for a long time. It's just now into the mainstream consciousness. It has led to breakthroughs in speech, image, and facial recognition. The key with deep learning seems to be larger data sets and networks, and those tend to produce higher returns. Yes, it's all about the database, remember? With deep learning, the return just keeps going up, Wu said, adding that previous machine learning techniques did not show any improvement once data was scaled beyond a certain point. You know, and this is, of course, the type of technology that places like the Alphabet agencies, NSA, FBI, are using to build their massive databases that are then sorted with a dossier on each of us. Minhua supports deep learning by allowing for an artificial neural network with hundreds of billions of connections that is hundreds of times more than any previous network built. And Beidou is currently using an even larger supercomputer to analyze 14,000 hours of speech data in order to improve the company's Chinese and English language speech recognition. Now, knowing how much China's a free country, it's got to make you wonder how much of this isn't being used for their national defense and spying capabilities as well. You know, and if we go back to a story that we looked at on Thursday, I believe, about Google's accidental evil robot army, as warned by Elon Musk. Hold on one second, because I want to play his little clip here. This has really got to make you get concerned about things. And of course, I bet you this isn't going to load because there's only 3 minutes or 4 minutes left in the show. And that's the way it usually goes. But we know what he meant. Hold on. We'll try it one more time. Black screen doesn't play. Let's go. I'm going to give it up in a second. Anyway, this is based on a book that someone was working on about Elon Musk. It says Elon Musk, on the contrary, says that AI is not only one of the biggest existential threats to humanity, but it is approaching fast. Quote, "The risk of something seriously dangerous happening is in the next 5-year time frame, 10 years at the most," Musk wrote in a leaked private comment to an internet publication about the dangers of AI a few months ago. Quote, "Please note that I am normally super pro technology and have never raised this issue until recent months. This is not a case of crying wolf about something I don't understand," Musk wrote. And I'm going to tell you, I'm in the same boat as Elon Musk. People who point their fingers at me and tell me that I'm crazy or Julie, you're just paranoid, don't seem to understand that Jules has been in technology for 25 plus years at an intimate level, from the very early days and understanding every little bit of it, to the point where I've taken my career a lucrative career in technology and turned it on its head to try to do something to save us from what is coming. Because this isn't a joke anymore. This isn't fantasy. This isn't science fiction. This is real, and it's coming. And if there was ever a question, and we've looked at what technology is doing to our brains, we looked at the chemical interactions that happen in the brain with dopamine, how it addicts us, how it makes us not pay attention and to become part of the machine, whether we want to or not. There was another story that just came out that, of course, isn't loading again. Humans have a shorter attention span than a goldfish, thanks to smartphones. And they got exactly what they were looking for. Don't think that they weren't expecting this. A Microsoft study highlights the deteriorating attention span of humans, saying it has fallen from 12 seconds in 2000 to 8 seconds. Now, mind you, I'm going to tell you, I did a lot of adult training, technical education for adults that I went through education for. And back in the mid to late 90s, it actually was 7 to 10 minutes for an adult attention span, which they had attributed to the amount of time between commercials. And that makes a lot of sense because back in the mid 90s, our drug of choice was the television. But with the advent of smartphones and everything that we've learned about how electronic devices act upon the part of the brain that is responsible for addiction and helps produce dopamine, just like video games, we will now understand how the study has relegated us to only an 8-second attention span, or that of a freaking goldfish. And it is by design and works very well for their evil plan. All right, guys, we are just about out of time, believe it or not. Everybody have an awesome Monday, and make sure you stick around. We got all kinds of great stuff on. Chuck O'Chelly Rewind is on at 6. This show will replay at 5 p.m. Eastern. Unlock the Door with Michael Cross, replay at 8. Brand new Truth on the Tracks with Brandon Turmerville at 9. United Farm Radio with Danielle and Kyle at 10. And Anti-Media with Nick and DB at 11. Everyone have an awesome Monday. See you tomorrow.